Just so you know, this show is about scary stuff. So don't say I didn't warn you guys. And remember, don't be scared.
Episode 110, Devil's Night.
War Baby here with another episode of Murderous Miners.
For those who celebrate holidays, Halloween is supposed to be the most fun day of the year for the children, second only to Christmas or maybe the last day of school. But murder doesn't look at the calendar, so any day could be the day when violence strikes, Halloween included. This very Halloween 2021 marks 40 years since the Devil's Night crimes of then 15-year-old Ronald Lee Moore Jr. of Waterford Township, Michigan, so this episode of Murderous Miners looks at the rape and murder of his 13-year-old neighbor, Colette Elise Molyneux. So, I only heard about this case because I read a book a few years back entitled Lost Youth, The True Story, which was written by Sean Webb, who grew up with these kids. The effort he put into this book is what allowed me to tell you what happened to Colette, so I thank him. A complete list of sources can be found in the episode notes. Nancy Molyneux, a divorced teacher, was raising her two daughters in Waterford Township, Michigan, in a fun home that backed up to a lake, offering the family all of the year-round recreation any adventurer would enjoy. The girls saw their father, who was the manager at the Belle Isle Zoo and lived in nearby Farmington Hills, every other weekend. Colette was kind, adventurous, protective of her little sister, and a voracious eater. Things all little girls should be. Not far from their lovely lakeside home lived the Moore family. 15-year-old Ronald Moore Jr. and his sister Kathy lived with their father, their mother having left after years of alleged abuse. That left the teen siblings to be raised by Ronald Moore Sr., a man who continued to rack up assault and alcohol-related charges long after he became his children's main caregiver and primary provider. The lack of consistent supervision and healthy role models at home took their toll on the Moore children, and although Colette was a year younger, the 13-year-old and 14-year-old Kathy Moore continued being friends. Miss Molyneux had made a comfortable, fun home from which to raise her children, one she hoped and assumed was safe, but as we know, one can never be too careful about whom you allow into your home. When Colette and Kathy became friends, it's likely the older girl enjoyed the comfort of her friend's home, the niceness of having a mother or even just a nurturing parent available. The Moore kids, who had nothing of the sort at their home a few streets away, were already in a downward spiral, already entrenched in an all-consuming pattern of escalating poor behavior and decision-making. The split had been hard on the kids' mother just as it had been on the kids, though she saw them as often as she was able to. Kathy's older brother Ronald Jr., or Ronnie, seemed to grow more violent as 1980 turned to 1981. The 15-year-old became known for picking on and beating up on younger kids, especially his sister Kathy, and he'd been known to be aggressive from a young age, an attribute thought to have come from growing up in a household riddled with domestic violence. He said that by the time he was 14, he was already using alcohol and marijuana to cope with his issues. Kathy Moore took to smoking as well and started to hang out more with rowdy kids and boys, which took a toll on her wholesome friendship with the younger Colette Molyneux. The girls lived in the same neighborhood, so when Ronnie or Kathy Moore had a birthday party, the Molyneux girls were there and they stayed close as children. It wasn't until the girls got older that their one-year difference in age began to feel like 10, and Kathy seemed to outgrow her friend. She was smoking cigarettes and marijuana and experimenting with boys, things 13-year-old Colette would never dream of doing yet, according to those who knew her. It was the drug use first, then Kathy's arrest for shoplifting that ended up being the final straws in the doomed friendship, with Miss Molyneux severing contact between the children. Colette only blossomed and continued to come into her own, with the end of the Kathy era seeming to have little negative effect. Though sad at first, she knew she couldn't change her friend, so she sought out more age-appropriate ones and focused on them. Meanwhile, Ronnie and Kathy Moore were busy growing up too fast. Ronnie's aggression had blossomed into something frightening and deviant as the 80s started out. He developed a habit of peeping into neighborhood windows that quickly grew into full-fledged breaking and entering. He seemed to love having the ability to betray the sanctity of a neighbor's home without their knowledge. In April of 1981, Ronnie Moore Jr. had even tried to get some of the neighborhood kids to enter the vacant home next door to the Molyneux's. He'd gotten Colette to take one step inside before she retreated due to common sense, and when she did, Moore Jr. threatened her not to tell anyone that he and his friends had been using the summer cottage as a hangout. When the girl returned to her house next door, her mother was calling the police, having received a tip from a neighbor. Though several other teens had been involved as well, they all insisted that the trespassing had been Moore Jr.'s idea, and he alone was arrested and charged with breaking and entering, receiving a juvenile sentence of 6 months probation. He seethed against everyone who'd been remotely involved. The other kids who'd gone in but hadn't gotten arrested, Colette Molyneux, who he was certain had squealed to her mother, and her mother, who had called and gotten the police involved, then even testified against him in court. As his probation period came and went, Ronald Moore Jr. seemed to be plotting revenge. Spring had turned to summer and summer to autumn, with school starting up again and Colette moving up to middle school. Halloween signified the start of the holiday season and all the fun and joy that goes along with it. However, Waterford Township would be forever scarred instead. As are many days that end in tragedy, October 30th, 1981 was normal. Colette and her sister planned to stay home to trick-or-treat in their neighborhood, though it was technically their dad's weekend. Their mother had gone to work, had two doctor's appointments, gone to the pharmacy, then stopped for a drink or two with friends and some backgammon, leaving the Old Mill Inn at 8 p.m. A large scavenger hunt was going on across Waterford Township, but at the Molyneux home, Colette and her younger sister watched Halloween 2 on TV, with the 10-year-old eventually crawling into bed with her mom around 11:30 because she was scared. Though Miss Molyneux didn't remember, Colette's younger sister did tell police that about an hour later, she awoke to the sound of something rattling. She recalled asking her mother what it was, but the woman had replied that it was nothing and to go back to sleep. A little over an hour later, Miss Molyneux awoke to being sexually assaulted by someone she couldn't identify. She fought and kicked and yelled that her younger daughter was laying beside her, after which her assailant ran out of the bedroom, into and out of the kitchen, and through the front door, which seemed to already be open. She caught a glimpse of him running through a neighbor's yard and jumping over their fence. Running to check Colette's bedroom, clad only in her robe, she realized that her older daughter was gone, having left only her blood behind. Miss Molyneux was already at St. Joseph's Hospital when a police canine tracked Colette's scent to her partially clad body lying in her own backyard, 50 feet or so from her home on the bank of the lake, around 2:40 a.m. Miss Molyneux, although unable to identify her attacker, did mention her connection to and fear of Moore Jr. and Sr., considering the burglary incident earlier that year and the fact that Moore Sr. had previously hit on her. Her general description of her rapist did not, however, fit Moore Jr., but once others close to the families began mentioning the teen by name, he rose quickly to the top of the suspect list, especially since police had little physical evidence leading them to any particular individual. There was a footprint in between Colette Molyneux's thighs, footprints all around the body, and those footprints were picked up on the other side of the fence that Miss Molyneux had seen the assailant jump over. Soil samples were collected from each of these shoe prints. Inside the Molyneux home, two unknown fingerprints were located on the front door. Officers canvassing the homes around the Molyneux were also quickly alerted to Moore Jr.'s previous hijinks in the neighborhood. Though most would assume that a 15-year-old boy wouldn't be capable of multiple violent crimes in the span of an hour, those who had encountered Ronald Moore Jr. in the past felt that he was more than able. Colette had endured rape and blunt force trauma to the head before she was strangled to death just outside her home, with her killer re-entering the house to specifically target her mother. The footprints around Colette's body matched the footprints found over the wall, which were ultimately tracked directly to someone's house, the home of Ronald Moore and his family. When detectives approached the home around 4 a.m., Moore Sr. said his son wasn't home, though Kathy pointed out that he was asleep on the couch. Moore Sr. advised the officers that his son would not be speaking to them even after he learned that they were there in connection to a homicide investigation. 5 hours later, officers intercepted Moore Jr. at his father's barber shop, reading him his rights, which he waived. He said that on October 30th, the night before, he and two friends had gone to the football game at Waterford Township High School, after which the trio met up with one of their girlfriends at the arcade. The foursome then went to a house party, leaving together around 11 p.m. He was jittery and evasive, but answered their questions. On their second attempt that day, they were able to obtain search warrants for the Moore home, all of the clothing Moore Jr. was wearing the night before, as well as hair samples, blood, and saliva. More than a month after Colette's murder and Miss Molyneux's rape, the Moores were still being interviewed, and the first week of December, Moore Jr. changed his story. Police, who had been busy interviewing everyone the 15-year-old had been with that night, were interested in what he had to say now, that he had in fact been in front of the Molyneux home on Devil's Night just weeks before, saying that one of the older boys he was with was looking to burglarize a home for cash. Moore Jr. claimed that he'd approached the home only to get scared and turn around asking to be taken home. He claimed to hear the door to the home open but said he didn't see his friend go inside. Another officer that came in and again asked Moore what happened that night, to which he replied with yet another story. This time he claimed that he waited outside while his friend entered the home, after which Moore Jr. took off running the two blocks to his house, afraid that his father would be mad if he was out any later. He blamed his run through the wooded area for any scratches he might have on his arms or face. Investigators gave Moore Jr. an ill-advised polygraph examination without the presence of a parent or attorney, and although it was inadmissible and a stupid idea, from a later appeal perspective, police said they just wanted to know exactly what they were dealing with. The test detected deception, and Moore Jr. was hauled in a few days later for yet another interview, his third. This version was different again, but in different ways than before, and this time Moore Jr. claimed that dirt on the knees of the jeans they'd taken into evidence had actually come from the yard of the house party they'd attended, because he said he was so drunk he threw up there that night. Investigators, Moore Jr., and Moore Sr. promptly visited the scene and collected a sample from where the teen claimed to have been sick, though the area was now covered in a thin layer of snow. Though the stories from the three that Moore Jr. had spent the night hanging out with varied a bit from each other's, they had been smoking marijuana and drinking alcohol, and the greater issue seemed to be that all of those stories varied from Moore Jr.'s in one specific way. He said that all four of them had left together in all four of his interviews, while no one else said that they had. Everyone interviewed about that night noted that Moore Jr. had been left behind around 10:30 p.m., with the party's host even mentioning that he'd been mad about it. When interviewed by police a day and a half after her daughter's murder, Miss Molyneux mentioned two peeping incidents that summer, just a few months after she testified against Moore Jr. and she identified his voice on a recording she was played, although when asked, she'd been pretty certain that the teen hadn't been her attacker, whom she described as an adult and strangely gentle. She said he didn't sound like Moore Jr., although she did realize that he was likely whispering and she was half asleep. She also said that the court incident had been the absolute final crack in Collette's relationship with Kathy Moore, especially after Moore Jr. had routinely threatened retaliation. Miss Molyneux also let the detectives know that she'd been questioned for 20 minutes following her rape, while her daughter lay dead outside with no one seeing her 50 feet away for hours. They assured her that the deep fog on that night was the hindrance of that search, requiring them to wait for the canine, and that they felt really bad about it. All of the soil samples, bed sheets, clothing, and biological samples collected in relation to Collette were turned over to Ontario's Provincial Police Laboratory and to Toronto's Centre for Forensic Sciences in Canada so that the most advanced testing could be performed. Ultimately, it was the science that led to an arrest in this case, as after all of the testing was complete, the rapist was determined to be a quote type A secretor, which Ronald Moore Jr. was as well. None of the other potential suspects' bloods labeled them as such, however 10 to 12% of the general population at the time was, but even in 1981, blood didn't lie. Fibers from the nightgown Collette was wearing were located on a sweater taken from Moore's home and vice versa, and matching vomit, blood, and saliva were also found on both of their clothing. The soil from the jeans' knees was determined to match where Collette's body was found, not his friend's yard where he'd claimed to have thrown up. The dirt found in Miss Molyneux's bed also appeared to have come from her backyard. Almost 4 months later, in late February 1982, an order to pick up Moore Jr. for Collette's murder from the Fairlawn Center where he was receiving psychiatric care was issued. They intended to try him as an adult and ultimately did. His trial began almost a year after the murder, in September 1982. The biggest issue seemed to revolve around the shoe prints for two reasons. First, the soil found in the sole of the shoes collected from Moore Jr. didn't match the soil found in Miss Molyneux's bed or on the knees of his jeans. Not only that, but the police had maintained that the prints leading away from Collette's body into Moore's home were roughly size 8.5, while Moore Jr.'s shoes were a 13. Almost exactly 1 year after Collette Molyneux's murder and her mother's rape, Ronald Lee Moore Jr. was found guilty of 2 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of criminal sexual conduct. He received life without parole plus 10 to 15 years for the sexual assault. As he ticked years off of his life sentence, Ronnie Moore got an associate's degree, found religion, and was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, which left him paralyzed from the chest down and confined to a wheelchair. With all appeals exhausted, for a decade his only hope has been a possible Miller-Montgomery resentencing, and on August 21, 2020, Ronald Lee Moore Jr.'s sentence was overturned in justice court. He was resentenced to 40 to 60 years for the murder, and with credit for over 461 months already served, Moore Jr. was paroled at the age of 54. Almost 39 years since the Halloween tragedy of 1981, the Devil's Night ending of the life of Collette Molyneux.